Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at lower.com field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at columbuscrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 1123. It is the 23rd of July, 2018. On the podcast today, I have Robin Young, CEO of AMER Minerals. AMC is the ticker there. And Robin discusses their memorandum of cooperation with GEVCO to help provide a transport and logistics solution on the Kunmani nickel-copper project in the far east of Russia. Also on the podcast, Neil Ricketts, CEO of Visarian VRS, and Neil provides an update on recent senior appointments to strengthen the company's graphene technology team with a particular focus on quality assurance. Also on the podcast, I have Russell Lamming, Chief Executive Officer of Keras Resources, KRS, it's a ticker. And Russell discusses the commencement of a funded bulk sampling program from the Nyanga Manganese Project in Togo. Plus, of course, it's a Monday, so Malky's here, Oil and Gas Sector Authority, talking about STX Energy, Sound Energy, Savannah Petroleum, Trinity Exploration and Production, and Genel Energy, GNEL, oh, sorry, two more as well, Aminex, and Cabot Energy, CAB. Plus, as always, I have the top 5 most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top 5 most liked RNSs too.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Robin Young, CEO of AMER Minerals. It's AMC ticker. Robin, thanks for joining me.
You're welcome, Justin.
Now, you got some significant news out today, and it's what a memorandum of cooperation for transport and logistics, and we'll get into that in a bit. Before we do, Robin, for people maybe tuning in for the first time or not familiar with your company, could you summarize what you're all about, AMER Minerals, please?
We are a mineral resource development company focused on nickel sulfide. We presently have drill identified over 1.2 million tons of nickel that can be delivered into the Asian market. We are located right next door to China. We are the largest undeveloped nickel sulfide project available in North Asia. We also know that a substantial amount, more than 75% of it, can actually be mined and placed into production where we can generate, say, a concentrate or a low-grade mat and sell it onwards into the market. So we're well positioned to take advantage of the electronic vehicle markets.
Yeah, and what kind of monetary figures do you have around that project at the moment, or projected figures? Do you have any at all?
Our most recent numbers, we're looking at a project capital cost ranging from about $550 million to about $850 million on the initial capital investment side. We are presently compiling an executive summary for release to the market in the very near term, and in that document we'll have all the numbers related to the net present value, long-term metal pricing, and operating costs, as well as capital costs and sustaining capital. We're looking forward to getting this out as soon as we can.
Yeah, but it's a fair old size resource, isn't it?
It is. It's by our numbers, we're seeing it as being the third or fourth largest undeveloped sulfide project in the world. There are other projects that are bigger, but a lot of them are much lower in grade. Our average mining grade we're looking at being about 0.7 to 0.75%, mm-hmm. whereas most of the projects that are bigger than us are averaging, say, 0.2 to 0.3% nickel. So we're able to produce a much lower cost per pound, nickel cost. And we're looking forward to being able to getting these PFS numbers out to our shareholders.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. So let's go into this GEFCO Memorandum of Cooperation for the Transport and Logistics Support. What's it all about? What does it mean, Robin?
It's very key to large-scale projects such as what we're looking at. We're looking at moving about 25 million tons of rock a year. We've got a mill that's going to have to be supported. So it's very important that the logistics work and work well. By developing this possible partnership with GEFCO, it means that it takes a lot of burden off the company. We don't have to, they can actually do a door-to-door delivery of product. The concentrate that comes out of the back of the plant can be loaded on GEFCO trucks, taken down a road, loaded into the rail system, which is a partner of GEFCO, and delivered into Vladivostok. They cover all the customs handlings, the duties, loading onto ocean freight, and they can actually drop it at the doorstep of a Chinese smelter or a South Korean smelter or a Japanese smelter. So this consolidation of a very large effort is very positive to the company and eases the management of that side of the issue. So it's a major component. We're quite pleased to have this in place.
Yeah, absolutely. And as far as you did mention there, the PFS there, but what is the next big milestone are you looking forward to completing there, Robin?
That's actually getting the PFS numbers out.
Yeah.
And it's very, very important. We've had some delays on it. I'm sure it's very frustrating to many people. But what we have done is the most recent information that came out with regard to the mining potential and it being as much as 23 years long is we've had to go back in and restructure this PFS. And by restructure, I mean, we've also been talking with international banks. As a result, we have some very specific terms that they would like to see in the PFS. And so that we can handle and provide a document that takes us as far as possible with them. And by as far as possible, I mean, it allows us to identify what our cash flow will be, how it will be delivered into the banking system, and how we'll repay project loans.
Yeah, absolutely. And when are you hoping to get that out then?
I'm just going to say in the very near future. Okay. We're working through the numbers right now. We are taking a look at a long-term price consensus right now of about $8 a pound. In the past, we've used $7.50, but in sensitivity cost studies that we do, that $7.50 is included. So people will actually be able to see how this project has evolved from previously reported numbers into the current position that we'll be reporting in the very near future.
Marvelous stuff. Okay, well, one last thing, Robin. For someone listening right now, that's the sound of this, but are not yet following you, give them three reasons why they should hit that follow button and add you to their watch list, please.
Well, there's three primary reasons, and it's a quote we've been using recently. Is we've got the right price, we've got the right metals at the right time, and in the right location. Mm-hmm. We're very near the Chinese markets. We've got rail systems, we've got ocean systems, and now we've got a logistics system in place. We are looking at a metal that is one of the best climbing metals at this point in time, and it's going to feed right into the electronic vehicle markets. So we're quite pleased. So those are the three main things: location, and it's a bit like the real estate quote: location, location, location.
Marvelous stuff. Robin, thanks for that, and hopefully we'll be chatting again in the not-too-distant future. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Neil Rickett, CEO of Vesarion. VRS is ticker there. Neil, thanks for joining me.
Good morning, Justin. It's a pleasure to hear you. We've all missed you, so it's good to hear your voice again.
That's nice to hear. I was away a week. I nearly didn't get back because the plane had issues. We got back on the plane after about 4 hours delay, but it was better to be safe than sorry. But I was sitting there, I took a picture, I think you saw it, of a sort of fire crew just parked outside. I could smell burning on the plane. Like, what the heck is that? And I thought, my missus couldn't smell it. I thought I was being paranoid. And that fire engine turned up. I thought, uh-oh. But we got back safe and sound, and obviously it's better to be safe than sorry, so I didn't mind the 4 hours today. Okay, so there's been quite a bit of news, Neil, as always, in a week. It's a long time in politics.
I can't believe it's only a week you've been away. It seems,
It's even longer in the stock market, it seems, a week. But you've released sort of preliminary results, and you've also announced quality insurance, R&S. We'll get into those in a bit. Before we do, someone just listening for the first time, they've just decided now they want to get into the stock market, and they're listening to you. How would you summarise your company for them, Neil?
Okay, that's easy. So we started in 2011 and we've grown very, very quickly. We specialise in taking great ideas out of UK universities and turning them into products. We have a number of very big global companies that we are working with. And our biggest product at the moment is graphene. So one of the most exciting and also challenging technologies that's come out of this century.
Yeah, excellent. Well, let's go back to the preliminary results. And this is for the year ended 31st of March. Now, your revenues increased 52% to 9 million. In fact, take us through some of the highlights of the figures there, if you could, Neil.
Great. Thursday seems like a long time ago. Basically, we saw revenues go up 52%. We saw our EBITDA go down by 33%. So that means that even though we're spending more money, we're bolstering the team, we're putting in capital equipment, that our loss was much reduced than the year before. I think it's a solid set of figures. Obviously, a lot of the operational highlights we're working around. People were expecting us just to do one deal in China or have one expression of interest, and we've got 24. So the reason that I've been so busy over the last few months is we are literally being courted by 24 Chinese organizations to get up and get running out in China. Now, that's a big project for any company, but for one as small as ours, it's a challenge, but one that we're absolutely loving. And a lot of that has happened in the last 6 to 8 weeks following the government giving us one of their key civil servants, Matt Walker, and he's been able to sort of make sure that some of this stuff is happening. And it's really good news. I mean, the largest shareholder, it's a huge opportunity for the company.
Yeah. Okay, well, listen, I'm a bit devil's advocate here, and I go with the guys who are trying to value you on traditional metrics, evaluation metrics, and I often say, you can't do this because, we are in a... First of all, you're using a material that's only been invented a couple of decades ago, and commercially, it still is not out there properly yet, so you are at the cutting edge, and like traditional sectors are seeing the advantage in using graphene, and that's why you've signed so many collaborations with big players. But let's go back to look at the revenue here. So 9 million turnover, it's a, like I said, 52% increase from last year, 1.561 sort of, 1.5 million loss before tax. So people say, okay, you're now close to 200 million market cap. How do you justify that valuation on those, on that revenue and earnings?
The collaborations we've announced since November have all been in key sectors: electric vehicles, batteries, clothing, packaging. These are all big growth areas for graphene. And it's no small coincidence that we've been chosen to partner and collaborate with these big companies. We've got our links with the University of Manchester and the University of Cambridge. And there's an old adage that, the pioneers get the arrows and the settlers get the land. Well, we're very much trying to be the settlers. We're trying to make sure that... that we're gathering all of the right information, that we build the right foundation so that we can really capitalize on this brand new industry that's starting. 2005 isn't that long ago from when it was first isolated. And if you then take off all of the preparation work, it was probably not until 2012, 2013 that we really got going in this country. 2014, we bought 2D Tech. In 2017, we bought Cambridge Graphene. So... it's a very fast moving thing. And the valuation is the valuation. I don't set the valuation, and nor do you. It's the market that sets the valuation based on the expectation that we'll deliver these collaborations. So the pressure's on us. We absolutely know what we've got to do. We have a process which goes through sort of inquiry, NDA, collaboration agreement, testing, and we're in testing with a lot of companies, and that means, you know, anything can happen. And you know, I've worked in industry all my life, and I've never been faced with such a great prospect as we've got here.
Yeah, I think what a lot of people are doing is they're looking at your, you know, financial results, which is a historical document now. It's you know, it's months out of date, but the share price, of course, is for the future. So the you know, the document is for the past, and the share price is looking at the future, isn't it? And that's and people can't sort of understand the disconnect there. And so, like I say, you know, what is going to happen is can be, especially when you've signed so many agreements, is can be very different from what has happened, can't it?
Yeah. And, you know, I always say this, you know, the market's always looking backwards and the CEO is always looking forwards, and there's a gap between the two. And so, you know, what I'm looking at is a completely different view of life compared to what the figures are probably saying. You know, to me, the figures are the figures. They show good progress. They show that we can run the business. Yeah, we've increased our costs substantially, but still reduced the losses. And, you know, to me, that tells us that when this does, you know, turn into fruition, then you've got a management team that can actually run a business. You know, it's not all smoke and mirrors. It's absolutely transparent, and there's you know, everything is out there for everybody to see. But it is a few months out of date now. You know, it doesn't take into account the Matt Walker coming on board and all of the good stuff that's going on with our clients and our collaborations and our team, and, you know, bringing key people in like Steve Hodge from Cambridge University. He is a master in his field. And that will only strengthen. And what we're seeing is a lot of these companies have tried graphene from other places. There's some big players out there who've spent a huge amount of money on marketing, but actually the customers aren't happy, which is why they're keen to collaborate with us, and that's why they want to work with us. So it's a great picture, really. And, you know, we absolutely understand the pressure we're under. You know, there's unfortunately, you know, we're still peddling 23-hour days sometimes. So I was out in Spain on Wednesday just before the results came out. And it's a busy old time for us. And it doesn't look like it's getting any quieter. So it's all about delivery now.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, you know, a lot of these collaborations are people sort of testing your graphene or incorporating their products and stuff. I mean, when you sign these collaborations, do they say how long these trials will take, or is it just an ongoing process?
So, you know, different companies have different priorities, different speeds. That's why we try to maintain a mixture of big companies and little companies. That's why we have, you know, people that can work really, really quickly and people that are going to take a long time. But it's just about creating that balance. So if we sign with a small company, it's not because we, you know, it's easy. It's because we know that they can move quickly and reduce some of the barriers that are in place. Whereas a large company is always going to take a lot longer. You know, just trying to get some of these collaborations can take you 2 years. Yeah, and there's a lot of skepticism based on the very, very poor quality material that's out there. So what we've done, and you know, what you know, is that from the RNS on Friday, is that we've got a fantastic quality team around us. Not only have we got our internal guys who look after the sort of run-of-the-mill ISO accreditation, of which we're absolutely covered despite what anybody tried to intimate over the weekend, we've also, you know, we've got the key players from the new standards. You know, so Dennis has joined us, who's the chairman of the ISO panel, and we've got Martin, who's done the BSI panel. And, you know, so, I mean, these guys wouldn't stake their professional reputation unless they'd done a lot of due diligence, and they wanted to make a change as well, which is what we're trying to do.
Yeah, well, let's just dig into that, because on Friday the RNS came out, graphene quality assurance. So is this the case? Obviously, there's different sort of standards of graphene, and you obviously want to attain the highest quality possible. And so take us through what this is going to achieve, because you've strengthened the team there, and the Graphene Council have verified the graphene producer program. Take us through some of the details of that RNS, if you could.
So there's a number of organisations which are out there trying to sort the wheat from the chaff. Consumers are fed up, you know, so big companies are fed up with not knowing what graphene is or how they go about buying good graphene. And this is just about us making sure we're absolutely at the front of all of this. So we work very, very closely with the National Physics Laboratory in the University of Manchester, who launched their service last week. We've also got the Graphene Council, who are testing our materials through AUKUS. So when everybody else is off on holiday, our guys will be we'll be turning the wheel, making sure that we can be the first out there with certified graphene, which is what we've always done. But it just means that there are these new programs which can test it. Now, in order to do that, to order to make sure we're in the right place, we've now got significant representation on the ISO and advice about how the company moves forward to make sure that we meet all those standards. And there isn't a company out there that's got these links. And it's that, when you talked about the valuation right at the beginning, that's what it's all about. Go out there, find a company that's got the links to the University of Manchester, which is the home of graphene, got the links to the University of Cambridge, which is another super centre for graphene research, the links with the UK government, the links with NPL, the links with the UK Catapults, Innovate UK. You know, we're a very, very small core team, but we've got a massive family around us. And I think it's testament to the company that our investors actually help us. They're the ones who are saying, talk to this guy in Airbus, talk to this person here, talk to this person there. You know, those kind of that kind of sentiment is unusual on the stock market. Mm-hmm. And so we're building a family. And, you know, we include everybody in that family through our investor events. And we and our advisors are an extension of that family. You know, they're out there making sure that that the company is in the right places at the right times.
Yeah, absolutely. Marvellous stuff. Well, Neil, thanks for coming on again. And obviously, always, we're not never too far from a bit of news, so no doubt we'll be chatting again in the not-too-distant future. Before we do, for someone who's just listened for the first time to you, talking about your company, give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox Markets and add you to their watch list, please.
Certainly. So the first thing is that Viserion is connected with graphene, and graphene is going to be everywhere. It's one of the key enabling technologies for some of the new technologies that are coming. The second thing is that the company has these unprecedented links with the UK government, the Graphene Council, the National Graphene Association, the University of Manchester, the University of Cambridge, and so on. And the third thing is that I'm the largest shareholder, so that you can be rest assured that my agenda is very closely aligned with that of the other long-term investors.
Marvellous stuff, Neil. Good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll chat again in the not-too-distant future.
Hope so, Justin. Hope so.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Russell Lamming, Chief Executive Officer of Keras Resources. KRS is the ticker there. Russell, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me, Justin.
Yeah, and it's the first time we've chatted on the podcast. I've had Dave Reeves on several times, so I assume quite a few listeners are familiar with Keras. But for anyone who's not familiar with the company or some brand new listener to the podcast, could you summarise in a minute or less, Russell, what is Keras all about, please?
Sure. Keras is AIM-quoted company. We have got projects in Australia and Togo, West Africa. We've got a market cap of around £8.5 million. In Australia, we've got a 36% interest in Calidus Resources, which is currently developing the Warrawoona Gold Project, with just north of 700,000 ounces in resource. It's targeting 1 million ounces by the end of the year. In Togo, we have 85% interest in the 14 million ton Nyega manganese project, which is currently in the final mine permitting stages. We had an internal feasibility study in 2015, and we're now about to update it from a costing and logistics perspective.
Okay, cool. And do you have the figures ahead of that internal feasibility study so we can listen to some of the potential?
We've got, it's a 250,000 ton per annum product that we're producing, both bulk and fines. And I suppose, you know, at the end of the day, the news of today will really take us through most of that update.
Yeah, well, let's go into the news. So you've announced an approval to commence funded bulk sampling program at your project there in Togo. So take us through the detail, please, Russell.
Yeah, sure. This is effectively some trial mining that we're going to do on behalf of a potential customer who is looking to process 10,000 tons of beneficiated ore through their manganese smelters in Europe. They are funding the entire program. It's estimated to cost about 1.5 million US. That includes capital, operating costs, logistics costs, and the management fees, which we will, Keras will be doing on their behalf. We simplifying the process, so it's not going to be the full DMS that's in the which will be when we go into full commercial production, but we're looking at a simplified washing, scrubbing, and screening operation. And the important thing here is that the exercise will provide real-time data when it comes to the operating costs and specifically the logistics of moving beneficiated manganese from northern Togo to the to Port Lomé.
Yeah, and it seems like this is good news for shareholders, because I know Dave has come on the podcast several times, and very much so your news has been focused on Australia and gold, but this is starting to come to life now, isn't it?
Yeah, this definitely was on the back burner. Obviously, over the last year to 18 months, we've been very focused in Australia and getting Calidus up and running. That is now being managed very well by Dave and the team down in Perth. So we can leave that in their safe hands. They're moving well forward very well on that. And we've now gone back and started focusing in Togo. We've had very constructive discussions with the Ministry of Mines and other regulatory bodies in Togo, and this is a big step forward in and a critical step in the in the approval process to get an exploitation permit at Nyega. Also, it gives us the opportunity to assess the economics of the project in real time, rather than from a desktop perspective.
Yeah, absolutely. Excellent stuff. Well, Russell, if someone's listening to this right now and likes the sound of what you're doing, the progress you're making now on two fronts, but are not following the story, give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox and add you to their watch list, please.
Sure. We have an exciting portfolio of assets with the near-term cash flow in Togo combined with the longer-term upside in the Pilbara. We have a management team that has a robust track record in identifying quality projects, proving them up, and realizing value for shareholders. And importantly, as a board, we now own 23% of the issued share capital, something which I hope telegraphs our levels of confidence in the company.
Absolutely. Russell, thanks for that. And like I said, probably going to be quite busy over the next few weeks, months, so no doubt we'll be chatting again in the not-too-distant future. Thank you very much.
Look forward to it. Thanks for your time.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Malky, Oil and Gas Sector Authority. You all right, fella?
Yeah, I'm very well, thanks. You enjoy your holiday, Justin?
Yes, it was, if anything, it's like we went from the hot weather here to even hotter weather but that's what you pay for, I suppose. But it's almost like a bit of me wants it to be rainy back home, you know?
It wasn't, though.
No, exactly, it wasn't. But we got another couple of weeks to it, apparently. So
looks like
who knows? It is one of those things where I'm thinking now, when is the weather going to break? Full well, when it does, we'll be longing for the summer again. You know, as soon as
mustn't wish too many away, because it won't be long before it's September and looking shorter days. And anyway, good at the moment, mate.
Yeah, let's go with looking at some stocks. What's happening, Malky?
Well, with a couple of weeks' worth of stocks to catch up on, I think I'm going to talk about a number of stocks today, all of whom, with one exception, I think, two or three of them are really, really cheap at the moment, and I can't even understand why at the moment. But we'll start off with the SDX Energy, mm-hmm. which you and I have talked about lots of times. And it's done pretty well in the bucket list and so on. But this thing should have done way better. And I suspect there's a huge amount of upside sort of pregnant in this share price. Today they've announced another gas discovery in South Dusuk in Egypt. This is the SDX 3X well. Exciting that it's discovered gas in two horizons. which is more important than usual. 32.6 feet of net pay, 22% porosity. This is another very good well in Egypt. It's the third successful well on South Dusuk. Assuming testing is successful, it'll be tied back to local infrastructure, as they say, for production of first gas in the fourth quarter, when all the other bits and pieces will come on stream as well. And so that's going to be very exciting in terms of revenue generation and so on. Mm-hmm. But also, while you were away, we had the production test on the SD4X, excuse me, well, at South Dusuk. The opportunities there are, as I said, are very exciting. That came in better than expectations. So all in all, just in Egypt, we're talking about a highly successful drilling campaign. We're going to get proper gas flowing in the fourth quarter, and that business is absolutely cracking on. And in Morocco, it continues to do well. While you're away, they signed up a bit of financing, very sensible there, with the World Bank. And it is important there that if you've been financed by the World Bank, you've had a due diligence that no one else will ever do. So that's very positive news, and I expect further good news from SDX in Morocco. Share price, as I say, has done well, but should do massively better. This stock is at a huge discount to my asset value, and at some stage it'll catch up.
Yeah, what is it? 120 million market cap, is it? Yeah, right about that. So, for the amount of announcements, positive announcements they've made, you haven't seen the shit. I mean, it has sort of re-rated a little bit, it's gone from 52 up to 70, but it's come back to 60 now. So, it seems to be taking the time. In fact, it hit the previous high. That it sort of just topped that previous high, just. But you're thinking, they've had so many good announcements out. It's I can't believe why it hasn't gone higher, But maybe
Everything is in its favour. It's well financed. It's got positive, supportive shareholders. It's got discovery after discovery in Morocco. Enormously high margin business there. We've now had three discoveries in South Dusuk in Egypt, and that'll be coming on stream by the end of the year. What is not to like about this stock, I tell you.
Mm-hmm. Cool. What's next, Malky?
Well, Sound have been on the move a bit since the sort of middle of the year. It's been a very quiet time for Sound Energy, whilst they do a huge amount of background work in Morocco. We're talking here about the Tendrara and Lakhbir prospects in Morocco, where we've obviously seen drilling success already. Things continue to go well. I noticed this morning that they've announced that, remember, they're in partnership with Schlumberger, which is a very important partnership. They've announced this morning that they're converting, Schlumberger are converting their, what is it, presently a synthetic interest into a direct interest, and that's being, so they'll get a full license position, which is 27.5% of the Tendrara and Lakhbir permits. Sound remain in there with their 47.5%, and they're an operator. But everything is looking good for this prospect now. After a very quiet spell, we've got drilling coming up towards the end of the year in T9 and T10, I think it is. We've got Schlumberger clearly, obviously they were already in with the synthetic, but this is an endorsement of this particular asset, which you couldn't get much better. So Schlumberger wouldn't be doing this unless they were pretty confident. So good news for Sound Energy there.
Yeah, again, another one where the share price has been grinding lower, hasn't it? And yeah, since 40 pence, is that sort of magic number there?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, the first half of this year, nothing was happening that you could see, but it was a bit like the proverbial swan, with a huge amount of work being done under the water as they continued to progress. I spoke with their exploration director, Brian Michener, the other day. He's now got a team of six really top people in that exploration department. They've just been doing all the work behind the scenes. So, you know, that's extremely positive. And sometimes, as you and I talked about, you know, when a company goes from exploration through to sort of not development, but the next stage, mm-hmm. a bit like Hurricane, when they've raised a bit of money and they've gone to the next stage, the market goes quiet because there isn't anything else that they can do in the meantime. People get bored. Shareholders get bored, and now it's all happening again at Sound. So.
Yeah, exactly. And when you have a massive rise, it does take, you know, you do have a period of sellers, you know, so it's hard to make progress in the shares, especially with no significant news coming out.
Also you've got, I mean, Sound is part of what I like to call the Holy Trinity, which is Sound, Echo and Coro, and they're all linked in a way. And you inevitably find that those people, I mean, these people are very big fans of James Parsons and... Yeah. You inevitably find that if there's a raise in Echo or Coro, some of the people stay in the family, but maybe take a bit of money out of Sound in order to buy a stake in Echo or Coro or both. But, you know, it'll swing around in due course. So I'm happy with these guys at the moment.
Yeah, cool. Anything else, Marky?
Yeah, I've got a number, I'm afraid, one or two more. Savannah, while you're away, announced the results of their third exploration well in Niger. Mm-hmm. This is Kanuma 1. This was another really successful well, an oil discovery, very much like the second oil discovery, which was, in my view, significantly better than the first. Looks like really good quality reservoir, consistent with the best expectations in the area. As I say, with the second well, all the wells will have a testing program, but it looks very exciting. And I think that what we'll see here is that that just further drilling. I mean, they've got an option for quite a few wells, but they've just taken the option, extended the option for the taken the option for the further. One well, which they'll drill, they've already announced, probably drilling, now. Really successful here. Savannah are going to have an EPS, an early production system, which will mean that they are getting money out of Niger fairly soon. It wouldn't be surprising if they didn't have it by the end of the year. Certainly, not too long. So very positive news from Savannah on their drilling program. And, of course, one or two of the people are a bit concerned that they haven't yet completed the Seven Energy acquisition in Nigeria. Mm-hmm. And this is a fantastic acquisition. It's taken a long time to work it all out because, of course, as we've spoken before, there was a huge amount of debt in there. But it's going to produce for them, 30,000 barrels a day equivalent or more. It's going to be a decent producer of cash for the business and therefore fund the other part of the business and the drilling and so on. And it's got the 20% of the highly profitable midstream AccuGas business. People have been concerned that it hasn't closed. I'm not too concerned about that. I think it's just taken quite a long to get the T's crossed and the I's dotted, and I would expect that before too long. Savannah is another one which is, dreadfully undervalued at the moment. I think people want to see a few of these things slotting in, but this should be significantly higher. There's a really big oil and gas business in Africa here, and it hasn't yet been appreciated by the market.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, it's a bit like, it reminds me a bit, it's a smaller market cap, of course. What is the market cap here? Yeah, just under a million. But it does remind me of STX, where it's, it's under 100 million, I should say, where the news is, or the share price reaction is lagging the news announced,
Yeah.
But we'll see. Yeah. We'll see.
And one or two more. Yeah. I want to see more briefly. We've had an update from Trinity Exploration and Production this morning. While they've been away, they've been completing this $20 million fundraise. The market, these shares have underperformed in the last few weeks because some people in the market were a little concerned about this fundraise. They had to do it in order to get... So they didn't have a tricky time with the convertible next January. But it's gone very well. Existing and new shareholders aboard. This fundraise is to, effectively accelerate their onshore activities in terms of operations. And, of course, they're going to pay. They've paid off all their debt after the problems of a couple of years ago. Production in the second quarter was modestly up due to maintenance, but it's still 16% up year on year. The second quarter, and they put in two new infill wells. They're planning to do six more in the second half, would be good. And then longer term, 8 to 10 a year, looking for production increases of about 10% or more. This would generate plenty of free cash flow. And after 2020, they'll certainly be self-funding. They're now, you know, following the raise, they're strongly financed. They've got opportunities in, you know, short, medium and longer term in their drilling campaign. Onshore, of course, as everyone would expect, but also offshore with their exciting East Coast assets. A lot of people are waiting for them to break into that and give them a huge amount of upside, which I'm very confident about that. You know, Trinity is probably the best in class in terms of break-even and profitability. It's a high-margin business. We get some decent revenues here. As I say, the shares have underperformed because of the recent raise. But there's another one where I think there's masses and masses of upside. I've got a valuation or a target price in the 30p level, a bit higher than 30p level for Trinity.
Yeah, and we're at just under 16.9 at the moment. So nice bit of upside there if it hits the target.
Yeah. So whilst you're away, also we had an update from Gunnell, which is the latest addition in the bucket list. Gunnell have announced that Pesh Kabir, where they've got a drilling program, is enormously successful, this, and it's easy to go under the radar. But in fact, their plans to produce 25,000 barrels a day after recent two wells look a bit conservative. I think they expect that to be 30,000 barrels a day by the end of the summer, and then more, because they've got two wells, Pesh Kabir 6 and 7, drilling ahead at the moment. Giving them, I'd be astonished if these weren't highly successful wells as well, giving the opportunity to go even higher. And Gunnell has had a reasonable run. It's gone a bit quiet recently, but I think there's masses of upside, which is why they've gone into the bucket list, and I'm very happy with Gunnell.
Yeah. G-E-N-L, marvellous stuff. Anything else, Mark?
G-E-N-L, and a very quick word. You know, one of the things that happened while you're away was that Aminex announced the farm out of their Tanzanian Rovuma areas and to Zubair, which is their 29.9% stakeholder. When it was first announced, it was really peculiar. You should look at the chart. Shares went up by 50%. Everyone suddenly thought, you know, this is validating people's best expectations for that, for Rovuma. And then it came all the way back down, ended up lower than it was to begin with, because people started to say, oh, they've given away the value of this business, and people say, oh, it's a £500 million value. I'm absolutely convinced that they've done the right thing. What they've done here is that they've been completely carried for the drilling in this area. They are also in a position whereby they, you know, the Zubair, who are very, very good in Tanzania, they are going to carry them for everything. Their Aminex will remain with 25% of the assets, and no one would have been able to do the work that's going to be done on this asset as well as Zubair. And I think Aminex shareholders will be very, very well rewarded in the long term. They just need to have some patience. They've had a lot of patience up till now, waiting for this to happen. I think they just need a bit more patience. And of course, it affects Solo. It'll be very interesting to see what Solo do on the back of this, because you know, Solo is on the move big time. A lot of things changing at Solo, with the executive chairman leaving, new director there, John Fitzpatrick, who is definitely a mover and a shaker. So people who are in Solo as well should keep an eye on what's been going on there. Mm-hmm. And that's about it, really. I noticed this morning that Cabot Energy, which is used to be called Northern Petroleum, this shows the danger of having a very substantial shareholder, because they sacked the board a few weeks ago and have now come into with that horrible word, strategic review, of the Canadian portfolio. and looking at where they're going to, whether they need to raise any money and so on. Cabot Energy is absolutely certainly on the blacklist at the moment. I wouldn't touch it with a barge pole. I think that they've hired an ex-army officer. Good news is that he went to Sandhurst and Exeter University, so he'll be absolutely perfectly primed to sort out the Italian interests. They have got some very decent stuff in Italy, but as most people realise, some people still haven't realised, it just takes ages to get it done. Mm-hmm. I would have thought that Cabot Energy is left well alone for the time being.
Marvellous stuff. Thanks, Marky, and we'll catch up next week, fella.
Yeah, look forward to it.
OK, time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Market in the last 24 hours. They are at five, Anglo African Oil and Gas, that's AAOG. At four, Ananda Developments, ANA, of course, on the ASX, but you can now follow companies listed there on Vox. And I do hold a couple of those shares because I do like that space, medical cannabis. It's a huge growth space. At three, Angus Energy, ANGS. At two, UK Oil and Gas, that's UCOG. And number one, also involved in wholesale, it's Alba Mineral Resources, ALBA. Okay, top five most liked RNSs came from. At five, Codal Minerals, shareholder webcast coming up. At four, Harvest Minerals, issue of performance shares. At three, Sound Energy, update on Eastern Morocco, should I say. At two, Fast Forward Innovations, agreement, that's with Factum. At two, SDX Energy, and of course I chatted about Malky. That's about another gas discovery at the 3D 3X well in Egypt. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at lower.com field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at columbuscrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.